The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
After a certain point, what's interesting in referral is not just that it brings in new customers who are higher quality because they come in predisposed to loving and trusting the brand, but you get this incredible data set as to what's happening under the business. And effectively, you get an image of these referral networks that are existing under every single business. And they are things of beauty. They are like, they sprawl far and wide. I was looking at one the other day, which was one customer who spent $216 on a luxury fashion website, kicked off a referral network that ended up being worth $430,000.
Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I'm so glad you're here. I empower leaders to turn indifferent customers into loyal fans. I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights and wisdom. Once again, I don't know why it keeps happening, but we keep going to the UK, and we've been in other countries in Europe, but UK seems to be more popular. I've had more guests from the UK than from like west of the Appalachian Mountains here on the east coast of the US, and I'm from Delaware. So it tells you something about where thought leadership in customer experience is coming from. But I'm so excited to have my guest, who I first learned about in an earlier podcast episode I had with Fred Reichheld, who was co-inventor of the Net Promoter System and wrote The Loyalty Effect, and most people listening to this would already know about. And Fred wrote this book called Winning on Purpose. In it, he talked about the earned growth model, which is a model of really talking about the health of your customer base as it relates to the loyalty of your customer base and the extent folks are willing to give referrals. And we haven't really done a great job of both measuring that, tracking that, and figuring out a way to spurn people who were willing to give referrals, a way to give them referrals. So I am so excited today because I have on the show Andy Cockburn, who's the CEO and co-founder of Mention Me, a customer advocacy platform empowering brands to turn fans into a powerful growth driver. And he scheduled this to have over now 120 what he calls advocacy experts. Love that term. Love it, love it, love it. And work with, you know, over 500 clients, including Puma, Charlotte Tilbury, Michael Kors, and other major brands worldwide. He was managing director of Vrbo, which I'm sure you all know about, of the Airbnb ilk, the world's largest marketplace for vacation rentals, and was formerly the founder of and CEO of Wigadoo, a technology startup in the social payment space. He also, has an MBA and an MA from Cambridge University. So quite a background. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
And Andy, could you tell us, there's no common path for people to get to where they are in the CX world. Tell us a little bit about what your path was and how it is you got to doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I guess I find myself in the CX world kind of indirectly because I've kind of come at it from the angle of I really want to help brands realize the value of customer experience by driving customers to become advocates. And that kind of been born out through my career. So I started life as a strategy consultant at Bain & Co. just at the time when Fred Reichheld was coming up with Net Promoter Score. So was running some of the early projects on how to get value from Net Promoter Score. And then got into the kind of tech startup world with my first startup in group payments, which is a lot about psychology and getting customers to come together. And then had this formative experience at Verbo, where I ran the UK and Ireland business through when Verbo IPO'd. And that was really formative because it's a fabulous business. It was leading the way in vacation rentals before Airbnb was around. And when we surveyed customers and asked them how they found out about us, about 60% said they were coming in on the back of a recommendation. So from CX, well, yeah. you are nailing it when 60% of your customers are coming in on the back of a recommendation. But as someone who is running the business, there's literally nothing you can do with that stat. You can sit back and be happy about it, but you can't actually do anything. So on the back of that, we, myself and my now co-founder at Mention Me, spent a couple of years playing with a couple of the brands, trying to see how we could take control of referral and advocacy. And we had 18 brands around the world, all of whom had stats like that, and all of whom had some form of referral program, but they were all really underwhelming. So we spent a couple of years trying to maximize two of the referral programs and managed to turn them into an incremental 20% of growth. And that was really valuable in the year of an IPO. And that made us realize that there's just this huge opportunity to help businesses solve this, get customers out there spreading the word. And that's a big opportunity, and it's hard. It's harder than it seems. And that's what made us want to set up Mention Me, because we felt it was a meaty problem that needed solving in the wider world.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly it was. And so I was just going to ask you what you saw the white space, but you just described the white space there was that there were really an underserved, and the folks that were out there really weren't doing it very well.
Yeah, so we started fixated on referral, like how do you get people to go through a tracked referral program? Over the course of Mention Me, we've really grown because we've seen so much data coming through that we can see a much bigger picture as how do you solve more broadly for advocacy. I can talk more to that later. But on the referral piece, what was really interesting is it is not difficult to spin up some technology that allows you to run an incentivized referral program, and there are lots of widgets that do it. But the challenge in referral comes down to the fact that it's an interaction between two people, and in that interaction it's a really interesting and quite complex social psychology. So you probably will this will resonate with you when you've had this experience of when you are thinking about sharing something with a friend, like you're running calculations at a million miles an hour through your brain around, okay, like, what are they going to think of me for this? Like, and ultimately, it always comes down to social psychology as to whether someone will share or not. And the first question is there any social risk? So if there's any chance their friend will judge you negatively, that your friend will judge you negatively, you're not going to risk your reputation or your friendship for sharing something that might disappoint that might come across as strange to your friend. But if you can clear that hurdle of social risk, then it all comes down to social capital. So will you end up looking good in front of your friend? Will you enhance your relationship with your friend for sharing? And if you feel like you will, either because sometimes it's a bit of brand cachet, a bit of coolness attached to the brand that you think will rub off, sometimes it's because you know your friend has a problem that you can solve. And very often it's just because you've had a great customer experience and you want your friend to benefit from that customer experience. When that happens, then you really get referrals to take off. And so our whole starting hypothesis with Mention Me was, if you can solve that psychology using sophisticated testing and segmentation to send the right message to the right customer at the right time, can you drive referral to be a meaningful growth driver for businesses? And through a lot of testing, experimentation, and optimization, we determined we absolutely can.
So tell me about the cycle, like how I go to a great restaurant. I don't know if you're in hospitality at all, but everybody likes to use restaurants as the case study because it is a great laboratory for CX, right? And I go and I have a great meal. Where do you begin to interact? Where does Mention Me interact?
Yeah, so we do work in hospitality, but it's probably easier to use a pure play online example just to explain it. And then I can talk to some of the nuances around hospitality. Sure. But typically, you're looking to ask customers to refer you at a point of delight. And most businesses can think around their customer journey and identify where the greatest points of delight are. And actually, one point of delight that is often underappreciated is after someone has bought from you. So even in an online retailer where you haven't yet got the goods or services, if someone has decided they're happy enough to spend money with you, they're normally pretty happy and they're quite excited about whatever they're going to get from you. And so asking people to refer you at that point makes sense. You know, it can also be good after someone has received the goods or service, after you predict that they will have got value from the goods and services, but you're trying to get to them in a way that you can get their attention and you know that they're happy.
So Andy, can I just double tap on something you just said? Because it's interesting to me and also a bit counterintuitive to think that right after purchase in the customer life cycle that I would want to get a referral. But I guess you discovered something about that particular point in the life cycle that either makes them inclined to be willing to give a referral. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's. I mean, we kind of call it the honeymoon effect. Someone has done enough research and convinced themselves that you are the right place to buy whatever they are buying from you. And if they've done that, then they are they're almost looking to validate their own decision by sharing it with other people. Now there are some categories where it's harder. Like they want more proof before they are willing to share, and so post-payment can be great if someone's coming back for a second or third purchase, but it probably doesn't work on that first purchase. But there are very many where actually it works even before the customer has had the full experience of the product or service, which, you know, surprised us when we set the business up. It surprises many of our clients, but we found to be true in most cases.
Now, one of the things, so that's helpful, and that bridges a gap for in my mind about why you would do that. It's really fascinating, though. And so... So how in this cycle do we begin to do this?
And so at that point, say we take the post-purchase example, in the online journey, we'll display something on the screen that asks someone to share with their friend. What you put in front of that customer is really, really important. So like, it's very easy to put up a vanilla message, but effectively we're trying to work out what is likely to motivate that customer to want to share. And so we typically do that for differentiate messages for different segments based on what we think their interests will be. We're thinking about what the message is that will resonate with their friend, and we're learning from what people are saying to their friends in other sharing messages to optimize that. And then normally there's some form of incentive, and the incentive is there not because it's ever big enough to make someone share who wouldn't want to share in the first place, because the social components kick in, but just because it makes it easier to have the conversation. And typically it's an incentive on both sides, because otherwise it looks like you're being nice to new customers, but not to existing customers who are helping you grow. And so something to kind of, we consider it kind of the oil in the machine to make referrals flow, but it's never a big enough, it's not the key to turn the machine on in the first place.
So I'm sure you give a lot of thought into what those incentives are and how you even how you distribute them.
Yep.
What are some examples of, and do they differ depending on the product or service?
They differ a huge amount, and part of our job is to experiment to see what works for different categories and different customer segments within businesses. The rough rule of thumb is if a client loves you enough to refer your brands, they probably want more of what you have to offer. And so that may mean a discount off another purchase if you're a retailer. It may mean free product. Like we have some cycling brands who give free gloves or free gilets, and that just really fits well, and it works really well to make get people more of the product because they are so addicted to that cycling brand. In some cases, that just doesn't make sense. So we work with some insurers or energy companies where money off just doesn't work, and so you end up with third-party vouchers, so Amazon vouchers and the like. And they're generally a voucher that is has ubiquitous appeal, but also fits the brand is the one that tends to make sense. But people often fixate on the incentives, and like I cannot overstate how the incentive is a very small component of this that really isn't the driver. As we're testing and optimizing, the things that make the biggest difference are like how you present the referral program, how you're asking someone. Even like we've run lots of tests on this, but even whether you position that you are giving something they're going to be giving something to their friend, or they're going to be getting something for themselves. You see like a difference of 50% in conversion rates based on that. And that's very hard to predict. It's very different by brand. But like the psychology that you, like someone feels when they land on that message, like determines whether they are going to share. And it's very small differences make very big differences in conversion rates.
So interesting. And I want to talk, obviously you're doing research and you're getting intelligence about what moves people, what motivates people, but you also have done a lot of work on getting a database more broadly speaking. Talk to us about kind of high level how you went about that and what the value that would bring to a potential customer willing to or interested in working with MentionMe.
Yeah, so I guess what I've talked about so far is how we set the business up and how we work to optimize referral. After a certain point, what's interesting in referral is not just that it brings in new customers who are higher quality because they come in predisposed to loving and trusting the brand, but you get this incredible data set as to what's happening under the business. And effectively, you get an image of these referral networks that are existing under every single business. And they are things of beauty. They are like, they sprawl far and wide. I was looking at one the other day, which was one customer who spent $216 on a luxury fashion website, kicked off a referral network that ended up being worth $430,000. And you can just see it sprawling. And when you see these, it reveals so much about what's going on. You see some customers who we call dandelion customers, where one person refers four or five people. You see some that are micro influencers, where they're referring potentially hundreds of people. You see very long, thin chains. And when you see a long, thin chain within a referral network, you know something is going really right, because that's kind of the definition of customer love. If every customer is happy to refer one other customer, then ultimately you end up with fantastic compounding growth within the business. And the other thing that's interesting about these referral networks is that they're not static. So yes, they look pretty on a slide or on a screen, but they're growing all the time. And if you can track where these nodes are continuing to grow or where they're dying out, you can start to manage them. So you can recognize that it looks like this really valuable network is slowing down. Let's engage these customers in these ways and ask them to carry on referring and play with it in a way that you can actively manage how your customer database or your customer base is growing from advocacy and referrals and see it happening almost in real time.
So let me just back up on one thing you said, because I think this is fascinating. But after dandelion, you said there was another type and I missed the word.
So there's the dandelion customers, there's the micro influencers, which are customers who you wouldn't necessarily identify as being an influencer, but you, when you see them through the eyes of referral, they are referring so many people that it is more than standard referral. And often that's because they're in the right groups, like either in social media or, to go back to the cycling analogy, we've got lots of, customers within our cycling clients who are in cycling sports clubs. And so they're sharing them there, and they can easily get, you know, 10 or 20 referrals. And once you see this, you can start having conversations with them and start to, trying to understand, like, well, what are you saying? Why are you sharing? What's going on? And once you understand that, then you can look to further optimize referral and segment so that you're sending the right message to the right customer that really taps into how people are feeling about the brand as they're thinking about sharing.
Okay. So I have both dandelions and micro influencers on my front lawn. This spring, I will be buying some weed killer for this. I think more micro influencers because it's spreading quicker. but just for those of you who are watching, you'll notice that Andy's brought up an image on the screen. And I realize most people will be listening to this podcast, would encourage you to go back. I'll be posting this on the YouTube channel if you want to see the visuals as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about what it is you're sharing here?
Yeah, well, so this is exactly that example. It's one of those referral networks where, and this is literally the example I just talked to you about, a customer who spent $216 who kicked off this incredible network. But this is when you get this data, it changes the way you think about your business, it also changes the way you think about the value of a customer. And so one of the things that we've realized over the last few years is that the way that businesses think about customers at the moment is way too one-dimensional. Mm. Like, most businesses consider a customer only from the perspective of their wallet. The core metric that businesses are encouraged to think about these days is lifetime value, which is effectively how much the customer spent up to now, how much we think they will spend in the future, often with a margin applied to it. But the reality is the value of a customer is so much more than that. The value of a customer is not only what they spend, it's also everything they do outside to go and talk to their friends, encourage customers to come and buy. And once you layer in some of, once you layer in the advocacy value, you just get a really different view as to who your most valuable customers are. And like a good example of this, we have from an online business to work with, or Europe's largest florist, a company called Bloom and Wild, where a customer we were looking at spent $84 in their first year. And as such, when you look at her from an LTV perspective, is not very interesting. She's in the lower quartile of LTV customers.
Right.
But that's the one-dimensional view. When you take the rounder view and consider her broader value, yes, she spent $84 and made three purchases. But in the first year that she was a customer, she also introduced four customers. And those four customers actually spent closer to $1,500. And so the value she delivered to the brand actually wasn't through her purchases. The value she delivered to her brand was through her advocacy. And unless you're taking this view, you totally miss that. And those four purchases didn't finish there. That went on to kick off a referral network that was worth closer to $5,000. And so suddenly you have a much more complete view of this customer. And it leads you to ask some really interesting questions. And this example is particularly interesting because she bought three times in the first year, she referred four times in the first year, and then she churned. She left the business. Mm. And that was a huge, huge lost opportunity for this business.
Mm.
Like, she brought in $1,500 in the first year, and they're a flowers business. They could have sent her flowers every single month to keep her happy.
Yeah.
And they would have got a great ROI on it. So when you think about it from a customer experience perspective, when you get this data, it leads you to a fundamentally different view as to how you should invest in customer experience to make sure you're delighting customers so that you get the value of advocacy. And it makes it far, far easier to justify investing in customer experience if you have the data and you can say, I know these customers are hugely, hugely valuable, even though they're not spending very much with us. And so I'm willing to, you know, either send them things that surprise and delight them, or put them top of the queue when they call the call center so that they get the best possible customer experience, because I understand that their value is in their advocacy, not in their spend.
So I've got goosebumps right now. I want to just comment on something and then ask you a question. So in the course I teach, and you and I have talked about this, I'm teaching customer relationship management, and it's not about Salesforce.com, pipeline management, contact management. It really is about how do we manage, nurture, and enhance the relationships we have with customers throughout their life cycle. The focus of my course is from purchase through advocacy. You mentioned the word advocacy. So it's purchase, service, loyalty, and then advocacy. And the point I want to make just affirms what you're saying is an advocacy is a whole different world, because when they're advocates, right, you mentioned it quickly, and I want to press into this a little bit more because there's so much pressure on CX leaders to prove the ROI of CX, right? And we've got something here we're talking about that does this in spades. And when you get a referral customer, and you mentioned this quickly, so I want to just kind of slow us down on this one, they tend to be, those customers not only come into the business, they tend to be more loyal themselves. So they tend to have longer retention rates. They tend to buy more share of wallet. They tend to be less price finicky and sensitive, and they tend to be more open. I'm going to add one more. They're open to trying new products, and they tend to be more forgiving. Just expand on that a minute, because I think this is central to what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, the difference in value that you see from customers who engage with referral, actually on both sides of referral, compared to customers that don't, is phenomenal. So for when referred customers come in, just by the nature of the way they were introduced to the brand, they come in predisposed to liking and trusting the brand. Like, the conversion rate is through the roof compared to customers who come in through other marketing channels. They will typically spend more on their first purchase or order. Often that's about 20% more just on the first order. Then when they, from a lifetime value perspective, they typically have up to double the lifetime value of other non-referred customers. So you're bringing in a much, much higher quality customer when it comes from advocacy and referral. But you also have the other side of it, where someone is referring, they typically end up spending more. It's another major touch point where they're getting social validation that they're buying from a brand that they should be buying from. So they spend a lot more, and they stick around longer. And actually, when you look at the difference in value between, so we call this view extended customer revenue, where you look at not just what someone has spent, but the value of their first generation of referrals that they've delivered. And that extended customer revenue is a really interesting number. If you look at that compared to individual customer revenue, i.e. just what someone spends who hasn't referred, on average, it's about ECR is about three times higher than ICR in the first 180 days after someone has joined the has bought from the company for the first time. And so you end up with referrers being very, very valuable from an ECR perspective. And actually, that can be a healthier way of thinking about it, particularly if you're a, if you're managing customer experience. Rather than thinking about the value of the new customer, think about it as the value that the referrer has introduced to the business and how you can optimize for that, because that's where the customer experience needs to be exceptional. And you need to make sure that these really high value customers who are bringing in new referred customers are getting the CX that they deserve, so that you are actively managing it. And ECR is very, very powerful for segmentation, like to understand who your most valuable customers are and to make sure that they continue to stay with you and spend with you and advocate, is where you can unlock huge value through customer experience.
So this is really a smarter, wiser, more cost-effective approach to managing your customers. Is, you know, think about who your most valuable customers are, like, and this can help define those, and then, you know, make that experience outstanding, yeah. Right? And give them what, you know, what it is they want. I have a question around this, though, because we're talking about all the intelligence and the information that you shared earlier about what we can learn about this customer base. One thing I didn't hear you mention, and I want to ask you about this, is going back to thinking about it from a reverse engineering standpoint, would I get information that would help me say, we need to design the experience differently? And because what we're learning from this data, so not just encouraging people to refer their friends, but saying, hey, look, when we go back, we want more of these type of people. So we might want to rethink how we're designing the experience.
Yeah, there's two, I guess there's, I can answer that question on two levels.
Yeah.
The first is at the highest level, like, we still believe that Net Promoter Score is the most valuable way to understand, like, whether you are doing a good job from a customer experience perspective. One of the challenges with NPS is that when you try and look at relative value of customers and align them to NPS scores, you don't always get a huge differential between promoters and detractors in a way that can be really tough for CX professionals to then build business cases. But when you layer in the value of referral, you get a much bigger differential. And so there was one footwear brand we were looking at where, when you looked at the LTV that was coming in from a someone who's scoring a 9 or 10 versus someone who was scoring 1 to 6 on NPS, the difference was about 31%, which is, you know, a difference, but not not that stark. Whereas when you layered in the referral value on top of the LTV, the difference was 71% between promoters and detractors. And that's a real number. It's hard data about the advocacy that's coming in and the new business that's coming in. And that makes it way easier to justify investing in CX to optimize for promoters. So that's kind of the higher level answer to your question. The lower level answer in terms of like, what should you do differently? As soon as you are tracking referrals so that you know what's going on, you can start having the conversation. So I talked about the referral networks. The primary thing we do with those referral networks is use them to work out which customers should we talk to understand what's going on. And I was having a conversation with a client this morning who's just done that. And the insight they got from those customers around what they need to do to unblock referral, to remove some of those social risk that's stopping customers from sharing in the first place, but also to maximize the overall customer experience that they're receiving for the brand so that they'd be more willing to make more referrals, was liquid gold. It's so, so powerful. And so once you get the data to know who to talk to, that's how you unlock how you optimize the customer experience more broadly. There are some great examples of things that our clients have tried, and that I still believe there's a very strong case for surprise and delight for your most valuable customers. So for high ECR customers, to say a big thank you for being an advocate for the brand and make them realize that you appreciate them being an advocate of your brand, surprise and delight can be very effective. And there was my favorite example from one of our clients. Is it was a pet insurance company. And if someone made 3 referrals, they sent them a tin of dog treats with their dog's face and name on the dog treats because they knew the kind of dog that they would have because that was in the insurance details. And you can imagine how that landed. I mean, it went crazy on social media. Customers that received it both stuck around for longer, but continued to advocate for the following year because they were so personally vested in the company on the back of a wonderful surprise and delight moment. And once you have this data, it makes it much easier to build business cases to do things like that.
It's a really good lesson learned here. And you've hit it now several different ways, but as CX leaders, it may seem counterintuitive. I did a podcast probably a year ago now with Dr. Peter Fader from the Wharton School, and it was called Don't Treat All Customers the Same. And it sounds, I remember putting a LinkedIn post about it. I got a lot of flack. I got a lot of feedback. Wait a minute. Maybe you should treat all customers great, you know? And the truth is, well, you could do that, but it's not good business to do that because it really is, you know, he used the example of overgeneralizing, but saying the 80-20 rule that, you know, 20% of your customers account for 80% of your profits. And so it's really important to know who those customers are. And in this case, you know, what their behaviors are, what their interests are, what motivates them, and how to encourage them to give referrals, right?
Yeah, that's totally right. I've had some very interesting conversations with this, especially actually with a really interesting conversation with one of the biggest retailers in the US who were arguing you should treat all customers the same. And it was almost a tenet of their philosophy. I think the problem comes like not all customers treat you the same. And so if you're not responding to them in the way that they are treating you, then like it's almost an inverse form of injustice. Like it, you know, Abby here at Bloomer Wild who referred the 4 friends, she did something amazing for this business. And so for this business not to reach out and to properly thank her and to say, you know what, you're an insider with us now and we really are grateful. That's what she wants. There are plenty of other customers who don't want that, but she really wants to be an insider with this brand. And when she doesn't receive that recognition and that thanks and the opportunity is missed to bring her as an insider, then she runs away. And that just feels like such a missed opportunity from a relationship perspective on both sides, from a value perspective from the business. And And I think that's the fundamental flaw with the, you should treat your customers the same way. Like, you should treat customers as they deserve to be treated. And some customers are really doing amazing things for you. And it's just wrong not to recognize that.
And I want to compliment you on this graphic because, and those of you who are listening, please go back and watch this, because this is a fantastic graphic, and I'm a visual person, visual learner. So this is a great way to show the illustration of really how extended customer revenue is a game changer when it comes to thinking about how to accelerate business growth.
Yeah, I mean, it's one, like, we started working with clients on extended customer revenue a couple of years ago, and it is wonderful watching the DNA change in a business once they start to fully adopt this and realize that they can unlock so much more potential from advocacy if they fixate on this rather than LTV. And even for things like making decisions on what's working in the business, so going into new markets or launching new products. If you launch a new product and look at the spend profile over the first 3 months, you get that one-dimensional view. But typically that is how businesses think about, like, product launches today. Whereas if you get the same spend profile for two products, but one of them goes crazy on advocacy and the other one does nothing on advocacy, clearly it has a lot more value to the business. And so when you get that data, you make different business decisions that are much, much more informed, that will lead to far better organic growth over time.
Excellent stuff, Andy. I am really curious, with as far as you've come in this in relatively short period of time, what is on your roadmap next?
Yeah, so I mean, as with everyone else, we're now very excited about AI and machine learning. And so we've been putting that to good use over the last year. So we can now, I talked about how timing was important as to when you asked a customer. We can now form a view as to each customer's propensity to refer at any given point in the journey, which is fabulous for, you know, making sure that you're asking people who are ready to refer, but you're not asking people who aren't. And that for those that aren't, you're trying to figure out how you can engage them so they're more likely to become advocates in the future. We also put machine learning behind extended customer revenue. So we have predicted extended customer revenue 12 months out, which is incredibly valuable for segmentation. So, you know, those high ECR customers are hugely, hugely valuable, like 10 to 15 times more valuable than the average customer. And we can spot the ones that are probably going to lapse in the next 12 months. So, you know, that is the gold that you need to save if you are in a CX or a CRM or a customer leader role. And so using that to inform segmentation is critical. And what we're working on over the next 12 months is trying to understand where each individual customer is in the advocacy journey, and understanding what it will take to help them go on that journey to become an advocate over time, and then helping to foster that, because ultimately where we want to get to is where customers are treated so well when they become an advocate for a brand, because businesses understand the value of it, that they understand, like, they are more disposed to go and advocate on behalf of the brand because they understand the reciprocal nature of it. And the customers end up having better relationships with businesses, and businesses end up relying more on customers for growth than paid marketing for growth, because that is how the best businesses grow. And if you end up there, then you end up with the best businesses winning, with better economics, better growth, happier customers. And that's, you know, ultimately improving how the world works.
Yeah, very nice. And it makes perfect sense. And that's exciting. It's an exciting time. And I'm sure you guys are wrapping your heads around how you can best leverage generative AI and new technology to make this thing even more powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an amazing space to be working in. We feel very fortunate.
Is there a, so you and I had a conversation right now, you're in the B2C space. Is there an ideal sweet spot for you in terms of customers? And one question that I think always comes to mind is, when is a customer too small? Because you might be talking about a 500 person insurance company or a retail grocer, or, yeah. So when, what are you thinking?
So where we are best suited to help is we need a certain scale because of what everything we're doing with the data. And so we typically work with businesses that are north of $25 million in revenue and that are B2C. B2B is like advocacy of B2B is fascinating. It's just very different. And so we fixated on B2C for the time being.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. What did I miss, if anything, that you wanted to hit?
Yeah, I think maybe the only other thing is you alluded to it at the beginning, but we're very aligned to Fred Reichel's thinking on earned growth. So for us, earned growth is the best North Star metric for a business to understand how well it is growing on the back of delighting customers. And so we pulled earned growth into the platform so we can calculate it for all of our clients. And earned growth basically is made up of two parts, which roughly equate to one of Fred's favorite sayings, which is the only way to grow a business is to get customers coming back for more and telling their friends. And so the equation is the coming back for more piece is net revenue retention. So how much revenue are you getting from customers who were with you this time last year? And telling their friends is how much are you getting from word of mouth? Now, Fred calculates it rather than through tracked referral through a survey, asking customers whether they were recommended by a friend. But when you get that number, it is incredibly insightful as to how well you're doing as a business in terms of growing on the back of your customers and delighting your customers. And so I would really strongly urge businesses to think about that. It effectively gives you your resting growth rate, that like how fast you would grow if you didn't spend any money on sales and marketing. And optimizing that number ultimately optimizes the entire efficiency of a business, because the more earned growth you get, the more efficient you are, the better your LTV to CAC ratio, the higher your valuation. That's the real path to long-term success. So we always start with that and then get into the customer level ECR data.
So if I am not quite at $25 million in revenue just yet, what tips would you have for an organization? What comes to mind for me is harnessing the different gates that people come to our business and capturing how they're coming, like tracking how they came to us. It sounds very simple, but sometimes it's hard to do, or people really haven't created a strategy around that. Is that right thinking?
Yeah, I think there's two sides to it. So if you, I would recommend, especially if you're a small business, earned growth is almost more important if you're a small business than if you're a big business, because you're still you're setting yourself up in the right way to grow organically, and if you know the percentage of growth that is coming from recommendations, you can still make decisions to try and move that number, even if you're not doing it at an individual customer level. What if you want to start getting into referral when you're smaller? There are plenty of small kind of referral widgets, like as part of the Shopify or Klaviyo world, where if you're an online business, you can pretty easily plug in and just start by testing and playing with what you think will work. Start to get some data, and then once you identify customers who are referring, talk to them. And this is the thing that businesses that have online components are often very poor at. It's really, really worth talking to customers to understand like how they're feeling and what's going on and what would make them refer more, because that's ultimately, you've got to go on a journey to optimize what makes people feel good about referring your business.
Yeah. Well, excellent stuff. Just so important. And I think you are totally onto something here. I can't wait to hear and learn more about how Mention Me grows and develops. Before I let you go, I want to ask a question that I ask all of my guests, which is, what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
I do love that question. The advice I would give to myself would be, don't spend time working on small problems. I think it is very easy to like get caught up in a problem, but if you in any problem that you're working on, but it's very easy to waste a lot of time working on small things. And whether that is the choice of career, if you're going into a business, make sure that the problem that the business is solving is a big problem. If you're setting up a business, make sure you're solving a big problem, because everything is a heck of a lot easier if you're solving a big problem for a client. And even when you're running a business, there are always challenges when you're running businesses, but make sure you're spending your time on the big stuff. And I think if I'd wasted less time on the small stuff, like, I would have had more time on the big stuff, or more time to have fun.
Excellent. Great advice. I have not heard that one before, but it makes perfect sense. Andy, thanks so much for sharing your knowledge and sharing what you're doing with Mention Me. It is great stuff. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'd like to ask you a favor. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up and a lot of other great content, and I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on the show in the show notes, and you can find those on my website at empoweredcx.com.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.